Hey guys, I'm Logan.
And I'm Patsy.
And this is Chills, a true crime podcast.
One that's sure to give you chills.
I want to start today's episode by saying that we are praying for Nashville. They were hit with a horrible, horrible tornado. And we are praying for all of
those affected, family, friends.
Everyone, yeah. It was
rescue workers.
Pretty rough, yeah. I mean, so, we are praying for Nashville. All right, we are on episode number 12. Welcome back. I forget to say this, but if you are enjoying the show, then please go rate and review us. And if you send us a screenshot of your review on any of our social medias at Chills Podcast, we'll send you a chill sticker. All right, let's go ahead and jump into episode number 12. So today we are going to be covering the Black Dahlia. Do you know about this case? Mm-mm. You don't?
I don't think so.
Okay, it's so...
Maybe once we get into it, but it's not ringing a bell.
Okay. This one's really, really popular, like crazy popular.
I've probably heard of it then, I just can't remember.
It's an older one, though. Like, it did happen in... I don't even know, the 1930s, I think, or 40s, one of those. Mm. All right. So this is definitely a case that has stuck with me for years. And then this is definitely like one of the most interesting cases to me, I feel like. All right. So Elizabeth Short, a.k.a. the Black Dahlia, she actually went by Bette or Beth. I found an article where all of her friends and family described her as... like, where they described her as, like, a person, and all of them referred to her as Bette and said that she was very lively and beautiful. So she was born on July 29th, 1924, in Boston, Massachusetts. I said that.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
It's early. She just woke up.
I did just wake up. It is early. You can kind of hear that sleepy voice. Okay. She was... three of five girls. After she was like the third. Oh my goodness. Whew. After the stock market crash, her fam lost everything, and her father's car was found abandoned on the Charleston Bridge, and it was assumed he committed suicide. This meant that Elizabeth's mom was the sole provider, which in the 1920s, I'm sure that was insane. So by the time she was a teen, she knew that she wanted to be an actress. And then whenever she was 15, she had lung surgery due to severe asthma and bronchitis. And her doctor said that she needed to go to a milder climate during the winter. So she went to Florida during the winter time and stayed with family friends. Which I don't understand. Why didn't they just move?
I don't know. Maybe your mom had a job there.
But I'm sure she could probably get a job in Florida. All right. In 1942, Elizabeth's mother received a letter of apology from her presumed deceased husband.
Mm.
Guess who was not dead?
Jerk. What a jerk. We'll say jerk.
Faked his own death. What a little piece of crap.
I feel like it wouldn't have been that hard back then compared to now.
Oh, definitely not. You don't have fingerprints or any of that. You have no idea. You just see a car abandoned on a bridge. You're like, all right.
God, what an ass.
This asshole jumped off. Guess what? No, he didn't.
Wow.
So, yeah, guess who was alive and is living a new life in Cali?
Hmm.
So, in December, at age 18, Elizabeth moved to Vallejo, California to live with her father.
No.
Yes.
I would never forgive him.
Hey, dude, she had dreams of being a star. Gotta do what you gotta do. So quickly, that turned out to not be the best bet. Her and her father would have constant argument, which led to her move out in January 1943. So she wasn't even there a month. Mm. Which, honestly, shocker. I mean, you fake your own death and abandon your entire family.
Yeah, I mean, your mom to raise them all and take on all the burden.
Yeah, everything's not just going to be peachy. So she took a job at the base exchange at Camp Cook and basically couch surfed. She rotated living with several friends and at one point lived with an Air Force sergeant who reportedly abused her. So then Elizabeth met a pilot named Lieutenant Gordon Fickling and fell in love. They made plans to marry, but the plans were put on hold when he shipped out to Europe. Eventually, things ended. And then in mid-1943, she moved to Santa Barbara, where she was arrested on September 23rd, 1943, for underage drinking at a local bar with friends. The juvenile authorities sent her back to Massachusetts. Then she returned to Florida, where she met Major Matthew Michael Gordon Jr., who was a decorated Army Air Force officer. He was training for deployment, and Elizabeth told friends that Gordon had written to propose marriage while he was recovering from injuries from a plane crash in India, and that she had accepted his offer. But Gordon died in a second crash on August 10th, 1945, less than a week before the surrender of Japan ended the war.
Hmm.
After his death, Elizabeth told others that the two had actually been married and that they had a baby that had died in childbirth. Obviously, this was not true. So then, after his death, she moved back to LA and fell hard, head over heels, for Gordon Fickling all over again. So the first guy that she fell in love with, she fell in love with him again. So no idea what happened between the two. I really couldn't find any information on this, but at some point, Elizabeth left Los Angeles on December 8th, 1946, to take a bus to San Diego. Before she left, Elizabeth had supposedly been worried about something, and Elizabeth had been staying with Mark Hansen. So her and Gordon broken up, and she's staying with some other guy.
Wow.
While Elizabeth was in San Diego, Elizabeth was found by Dorothy French sleeping in one of the seats at the Aztec Theater after an evening show. So she was sleeping in a movie theater. Elizabeth told Dorothy that she left Hollywood because finding a job as an actress was difficult with the actor's strike that was going on at the time. Dorothy felt sorry for her and offered her a place to stay at her mother's home for a few days. In all reality, Elizabeth ended up sleeping there for over a month. While living with the French family, Elizabeth continued her late night partying and dating habits. And she became fascinated with Robert Red Manley, a salesman from Los Angeles who had a pregnant wife at home.
Hmm.
The two saw each other on and off for a few weeks, and Elizabeth asked him for a ride back to Hollywood. Robert picked her up from the French home on January 8th, 1947. He paid for her hotel room for that night and went to party with her. Robert had an appointment on the morning of January 9th and returned to the hotel to pick Elizabeth up around noon. She told him that she was returning to Massachusetts, but first needed to meet her sister at the Biltmore Hotel in Hollywood. He dropped her off and she waited for her sister to arrive. Robert Manley and the hotel employees were the last people to see Elizabeth Short alive. As far as the Los Angeles Police Department could tell, only Elizabeth's killer was the last person to see her on January 9th, 1947. She was missing for 6 days from the Baltimore Hotel for, I don't know if it's Baltimore or Baltimore. I just realized that now.
I think it's Baltimore.
I think it's Baltimore. I don't know why my notes say Baltimore.
It might be Biltmore. I think I've heard of
Biltmore. I think it is Biltmore.
Biltmore, yeah. Yeah, Biltmore Hotel, yeah.
I think it is Biltmore. Okay, I apologize. I'm too tired.
Isn't it a really rich hotel?
I think it is too.
It's real swanky.
Okay, so she was missing for 6 days from the hotel before her body was found in a vacant lot on the morning of January 5th, 1947. Okay, real quickly, I'm going to show you a picture of Elizabeth. All right, so this is what she looked like.
It's not all I pictured her looking like.
This is her mugshot from when she was arrested.
Oh, wow.
Oh, don't see that. You're not supposed to see that yet.
Oh. Ouch.
Yay.
Okay.
Okay, she accidentally saw a crime scene photo. Whoops.
Whew.
Okay. So, it was a cold and dreary morning when Betty Bursinger left her home on Norton Avenue. She was going to a shoe repair shop and took her three-year-old daughter with her. The pair walked up the street, and Betty noticed something in the weeds. At first, she thought it was a mannequin. It looked like the torso had been detached from the lower half.
Did you hear that? Of course a mannequin.
Yep. Never a mannequin. I'll repeat that. It looked like the torso had been detached from the lower half of the mannequin. She walked closer and realized it was a woman's body that had been severed in half.
Oh, gosh.
So now I'm going to show you the crime scene photos. I know you already saw one, but that was her face.
Oh, that's horrible.
And this was...
Oh.
Her top torso.
Ooh. Dang, somebody's sick.
Yeah, and then this is after they covered her up, but yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, okay, the LA police realized very quickly that the woman's body had been posed. She was nude, lying on her back with her arms raised over her shoulders, and her legs were spread. And then her torso was, like, a little bit, like, closer. So the torso and her lower half were, like, not... You saw the crime image. Right. How would you describe that? They were, like, a jar.
Yeah.
They weren't, like...
Stuck together.
Lined up correctly. Yeah.
Odd. It was kind of odd.
It was very odd. Her body was covered in cuts and abrasions, and her mouth had been sliced to extend her smile from ear to ear. Like, holy crap. So, investigators believe that she had been tied down, tortured for several days due to the rope marks on her wrist, ankles, and neck. Her body had been sliced in half above the waist. There was no blood in her body nor at the crime scene. Yeah, investigators determined that she must have been killed elsewhere, cleaned of blood, and then dumped in the vacant lot overnight. There was a ton of reporters, photographers, and just like a huge crowd of people gawking at this crime scene and contaminating evidence. I mean, people were just like walking right next to her body.
Mm.
Which, I mean, I understand that I feel like, you know, there's not a ton you can do in 1947. You don't have, like, DNA and all that stuff. But still,
it's a crime scene.
They're contaminating it. So they lifted the woman's prints and was able to identify her as Elizabeth Short. So the fact that she got arrested previously for underage drinking, that was, like, a really good thing. Yeah, because
identified who she was.
Yeah, she wouldn't have been in the system if it hadn't been. And who knows? Like, we may never have been able to identify her. So an autopsy was performed, and it revealed multiple lacerations to the face and head, and that the body had been washed and cleaned after she had been killed. There were numerous cuts in a crisscross pattern over her pubic area, and her pubic hair had been removed by hand. Most of the damage done seemed to have been postmortem, including the severing of the body at her waist. The official cause of death was hemorrhage and shock due to a concussion of the brain and lacerations on the face. So I read an article, I'll have it linked in the show notes, where the investigator told Elizabeth's mother that Elizabeth had won a beauty contest in Los Angeles just so he could get information about her life before he told her the truth about her being dead.
Wow.
How fucking shitty is that?
Pretty shitty.
Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, in the article, they said that, like, the mom, like, gushed and, like, talked for, you know, hours about her daughter. And then, just so that he could get information. And then he called back not long after that and was like, yeah, no, sorry, she did. Like, what a piece of shit. Like, I understand you have to find out information, but, like, that's shitty. I don't care. That's shitty. So then on January 23rd, 1947, the examiner received a call from a man claiming to be Elizabeth's killer. He said he was upset with the way the story was being told in the papers.
He did it for fame?
Well, just listen. He offered to mail Elizabeth's belongings to the paper to prove he was the killer. And then the examiner received a package and letter from magazine clippings the next day. It had Elizabeth Short's birth certificate, business cards, photographs, and an address book with the name Mark Hansen on the cover. This is when Mark Hansen became a prime suspect. So, a few miles from the lot, Elizabeth Short's handbag and shoe were found in a trash can the same day, and eventually more letters were received. One stated, I will give up in the Dahlia killing if I get 10 years. Don't try and find me. Also, all of that stuff was found was rinsed with gasoline, and there were absolutely no fingerprints that could be lifted, which I don't really know what you could have done in 1947. I don't really know about the whole fingerprint thing in 1947. So due to the very clean and surgical like cut of the body in two, the investigators believe that the murderer had some sort of medical training. So by June 1947, police had eliminated 75 suspects. I'm sorry, you're definitely going to hear Tinsley in the background, as always. So about 60 people confessed to the Elizabeth Short murder, but only 22 people were considered viable suspects by the Los Angeles district attorney. So now I'm going to go into the suspect list, because this, I don't know if you know this, but this is a cold case. This has never been solved.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. The first suspect is Mark Hansen. So if you remember, Elizabeth stayed with him sometimes, and he had links to three of the other suspects, and there were reports of him trying to seduce her and her turning him down. Next up is Walter Bailey. He was a Los Angeles surgeon who lived one block south of the vacant lot where Elizabeth Short's body had been dumped. His daughter was friends with Elizabeth's sister. And police have technically never considered him a suspect, but a lot of people theorize that it could have been him. So then the next suspect is Ed Burns. And this one I'm not really sure about. But there was a writer that spent years deciphering the letters that were received by the examiner, and he believes that Ed Burns was the murderer. So there's a website, and it's called The Black Dahlia Solution, which explains this writer's theory. And basically, this is what he believes. So in January 1947 in Chicago, a 6-year-old girl was kidnapped and murdered. Her dismembered body was found in the sewers. And yeah, the killer was caught, but apparently Elizabeth Short became obsessed with this girl's murder and would tell people at bars that she was a reporter and would tell them all the gruesome details of the murder. And it was during this time that the writer believes that she met Ed and the two started some type of relationship. They said Ed wasn't very attractive, which is apparently why no one has seen him, because the writer says that Elizabeth was embarrassed of him. And then the writer believes that Elizabeth was so obsessed with that case that it made Ed so angry that he murdered her in a similar way. So again, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that one. But
it sounds like, and so
they were in a relationship apparently.
Yeah, so it's like, how could you? I just don't know how you. Well, people do it all the time.
Yeah,
murder somebody you supposedly have feelings for or love. Even I don't know. That's just weird. And back then, I feel like, how would you have so much information back in the 1940s?
Yeah, that's true about that case.
There's not, you know, internet like there is now. So how are you supposed to find out so much information? How could you know that much to...
Especially from a completely different state.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And again, this is literally just a writer came up with this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like he's a suspect of the police or anything. So Joseph A. DeMayus, a 29-year-old soldier, confessed to the murder just a few weeks after it occurred. He believed that he had killed Elizabeth during his blackout, but he had been seen in New Jersey on the day of the murder, making it impossible.
Why do people confess to something that they didn't do?
I don't know.
Get it. I mean,
I really don't know. So this one is the one that, like, everyone, like, latches onto. Like, this is the one that everyone thinks is the one that did it. And so his name is Dr. George Hodel. So he was originally on the police's radar because he was accused of raping his daughter. His daughter claimed during the trial that he was the Dahlia killer, but there was not really evidence against it, I guess.
He was a doctor?
Yes, he was a doctor. And he went through the trial, but he was never, like, actually convicted of it. I mean, I don't know much about the trial, but... all I know is that, like, during the trial, his daughter claimed that he was the Dahlia killer. And I know that a photo of Elizabeth was found in his belongings. And his son, like, to this day, strongly believes that he killed Elizabeth Short. And there's actually a book that he wrote all about it.
Hmm.
Yeah, but a lot of people think it was him. He was a doctor and everything, so... I mean, it would make sense, but...
So he wrote a book about killing her?
No, the son wrote a book about he believes that his father's the killer. Dang. So then George Knowlton, his daughter says that she witnessed her dad beat Elizabeth to death with a claw hammer. She says that the two were having an affair and claims that her father forced her to help dispose of the body. She wrote a book titled Daddy Was the Black Dahlia Killer. And personally, I don't believe that this is true. I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't want to, like, talk crap, but I don't think that that's true. I don't know. I feel like...
sad thing is we'll probably never find out.
No, I don't think we'll ever actually know who killed her. So then the next one is Dr. Patrick O'Reilly, who was close friends with Mark Hansen. He had been convicted of assault with a deadly weapon for taking his secretary to a motel and sadistically beating her almost to death, apparently for no other reason than to satisfy his sexual desires without intercourse. That is a direct quote from the district attorney's files.
Wow.
Yes. So he was on the police's radar. So the murder of Elizabeth Short still remains a cold case, and the LAPD has jurisdiction and has never released any of the records. I don't know, maybe if they did, who knows? Maybe the case could get solved. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the case is so popular. There are definitely going to be people who...
I mean, 1940s?
Yes.
That's like 70-some-odd years ago.
Yeah, a long-ass time ago. And there are no answers. Like, literally, absolutely no answers.
And the people that worked on it are no longer alive.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe if this crime scene hadn't been contaminated, they could have gotten something from it.
And in the future. I don't know how many, you know, I mean, compared to now, how many cases actually get solved?
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't nearly as many then as there is now, but you don't have a lot to go on.
Yeah. I do think that the murderer is
one of those people. There wasn't even a computer, so there was no computer database.
No.
You know, this was all by hand.
Yeah, but they could have gotten something for the future to run. Because, you never know. But, I mean, this case is extremely popular. I mean, there's even a band called the Black Dahlia.
Well, I feel like the way her body was that's kind of fucked up. Mutilated. Yes, yeah. It is. Who would do that?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Wow. Dang.
I did find why they called her the Black Dahlia. That's what I thought, too. So, I guess customers at a drugstore in Long Beach dubbed Elizabeth Short the Black Dahlia as a joke in reference to the film Noir Murder Mystery, The Blue Dahlia, which was released 9 months prior to her murder. Elizabeth Short frequented this drugstore when she first lived in Long Beach, and the customers remembered Elizabeth Short for her black hair, black garments, and fair complexion. So that's where she got the name of the Black Dahlia. But I definitely feel like we become, like, so desensitized to these, like, crimes and murders. I mean, because we're constantly listening to podcasts and, like, watching the ID channel, and we hear about, like, these horrific murders and crimes, and it's almost like we forget that it's actually real and that these are, like, human beings.
Yeah, because if I would have seen that picture years ago before I started listening to podcasts...
I would have been shocked.
I would have had nightmares.
Mm-hmm. I did have nightmares. A girl actually wrote about this in high school.
Really?
Yes, that's where I first learned about the case.
And that's what I'm saying. You
and I did have nightmares.
But now it's not like you become immune to it, but it's like you almost become used to it.
Yeah, you do. And I mean, I feel like that's definitely evident in this case that we like become desensitized to it because, I mean, there's literally a band called it. Like,
yeah, and people listen to it evidently. I mean, yeah.
I mean, and if you look again at her crime scene photos, like this woman was brutally murdered and tortured, and like, who knows what her final moments were? Tinsley's rubbing around on the carpet. Sorry,
but you know, I've never heard of this one.
Really?
Yeah, and I may.
That's surprising because it's so popular.
I may have heard the word the Black Dahlia before, but I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
So I mean. There may be people out there that don't really know that that's what the band means or is, because I didn't.
I mean, it sounds like a cool name.
Yeah.
But
until you read into it, and it's like, whoa.
I mean, maybe they got it from something else, but I don't know how you could have.
I'm going to go with not.
Yeah. I'm going to go with not as well. That's all we have for the case, so I guess now we'll get more into our chit-chat, even though we've obviously been chit-chatting. Did you watch, or did you listen to the sleep paralysis episode of Morbid?
Yes.
Yes. Crazy. Creepy. Yes.
Yes. Everybody's been there. Everybody's done it. I've done it.
You've had sleep paralysis?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you've had it.
Yes. Scary.
I mean, you know I've had it.
Yeah.
I used to get it all the time, and I would get it whenever I would fall asleep on you guys' couch.
I don't think I realized that's what they were.
Yeah.
Until that.
And I listened until to you that. Had yeah. It, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I can remember you telling me, like, your nightmares, mm-hmm. and they were
mm-hmm.
like that. Yeah, that's true. Mine's completely different, though. Mine's not like that. Mine's literally just, like, the paralysis. Like, I don't really... There's only been one time when I've actually, like, heard something, and it did freak me out, but it was here, and I was home alone, and I fell asleep in bed. I was just taking, like, a nap, and I heard, like, it sounded like somebody was, like, walking around in the house, and I was, like, trying to get myself mm-hmm. to wake up, because mm-hmm. I was like, shit, I'm gonna be murdered. But that's the only time that happened. Every other time, it was literally just paralysis, like, nothing else. Like, I knew I was... I knew that something was going on, and then I was not fully awake, mm-hmm. but I could not wake myself up. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, I would like make those noises to try and get you
yes.
to
yes,
like know that hey, something was happening and wake me up.
Yeah, matter of fact, I had one not too long ago.
Really? And I haven't Jeff's had one like, in a long time, and I hope
well, I saw happen. You over there jerking. I said, Jeff, I was screaming. I was trying to scream to wake myself up. I said, if you ever see me doing that, wake me up because I am having a nightmare.
I mean, it's terrifying just like the sleep paralysis, but I did not know that there was so much like more to it that people have those kind of crazy mm-hmm. nightmares with them. Thank God I do not.
Yes.
And mine's literally just the paralysis. But because mm-hmm. that, no, I can't imagine. Because, I mean, just that one day whenever I thought someone was in the house.
I know. And there's nothing
you can do. That freaked me out, yeah.
Nothing you can do.
No. And then when I finally did wake up, I was like, oh, shit, that was a dream. But now I'm scared.
I do the same thing. It's like, oh, that was just a dream. But, yeah. I was like, moved just a little closer to Jeff.
I was home alone, so I was just gosh. All right, I'm going to get up, and I'm going to lock this door. Going to lock the bedroom door.
Yeah, it's a creepy feeling.
It is.
I hate it.
And I mean, like, you were screaming so loud.
I woke myself up from screaming.
Yeah. And I mean, if anything's coming out, it's just a tiny little, like...
But it's enough to jot you to where you do wake up.
Or to tell somebody else, hey.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just talking about it gives me the creeps. I hate it. Hope I don't go home and have one now.
I know. Because I was listening to the episode last night, and I was like, oh, please do not. Please do not. Which mine have always, knock on wood, I can't remember any time where they've actually happened whenever I was like having a normal sleep. It's only whenever I was having like a nap.
Nah, mine's been in sleep, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And our room is pitch black.
Yeah. You guys is up pitch, yeah, it is pitch black. Well, that's how you should know that it's just a dream, though, that you can see things.
True, but I don't think my mind is thinking that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you can't control your dreams. I've tried. I have tried to control my dreams, and I can't. I can't control my dreams.
I know. Did you hear where, like, Elena or whatever? I don't know. Maybe it was Ash. One of them said that they can control their dreams. And I was like, I cannot do that.
I might start controlling my dream when I first fall asleep, but it never ends the way I want it to.
I don't think I can control my dreams at all. They just happen. Thankfully, I don't really have any nightmares anymore, but
Thankfully. You know, I take that back. I can control my dreams sometimes because, like, if I'm in a fight or flight,
yeah,
I start flapping my arms like I'm flying, and I just fly straight up and out of the situation.
I only remember one dream that happened. So I think that is controlling
my dreams. I've done it several times.
Usually, I wake up before anything bad happens. Like, anything bad happens.
That's good.
Well, they say that, like, if you die in your dream, then you'll die in real life because you'll have a heart attack.
But then how do you know? That's what I'm saying. How do they really know?
That's so true. How do they know? I don't know. Sleep. But
I've heard that before, too.
I mean, it makes sense that you'd have a heart attack because you would be so
terrified. How do they really know what you're dreaming about?
I know. I don't know. Sleep study? I don't know.
I don't know. I have no idea. About it.
I don't know anything about sleep.
Maybe if you were in a sleep study clinic... And somehow they were...
But what are the chances? Even
then, I don't know how they would know what you're actually dreaming about. Because it's in your mind.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that it would happen. I don't know. Maybe it's a myth and something that someone just said. But it makes
sense. It does make sense. But then when you really think about it, I don't see how they could do it.
How they could know. Yeah. That's true.
Because even when they're taking these tests, it ain't like there's a screen and it's showing your dream. Yeah. You know?
That is true.
So that's just, it's got to be a myth. There's no way.
Or like a scientific, like from a scientific standpoint.
Yeah, because it's just like they say, if you have a dream that you're falling off a cliff, that you'll die before you hit the bottom.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone has actually dreamed of them dying. Because I know I've always woken up.
Me too.
So I'm very curious. Because I mean, that would be fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it would be.
You would think it was real.
Your dad,
you probably wouldn't live.
Your dad the other day, he was snoring, and I took as much as I could. So I reached over and I shoved him a little bit harder than what I probably should have.
That's me. Every
he was
time.
Dreaming that he was standing on the edge of a cliff, and when I shoved him, he fell off the cliff.
Did he wake up?
Yes, he woke up, and he yelled at me and said, "Why'd you shove me off the cliff?" And I'm like, "What?" And then when we woke up that night, he told me. And I was just like, oh my gosh. It was funny.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I mean, that wouldn't have been if he would have died, but that's funny. Oh, I regularly elbow.
You didn't find it funny.
I regularly elbow Brandon, kick him.
I know. I just
do all the things to make him stop snoring.
It's like I just fall asleep and then he starts snoring. He's like, I wake up and I say, oh, I slept so good. And I'm like, well, I didn't.
Yeah, right. Brandon has a habit of talking in his sleep. And so then, like, in their normal things.
He talks in his sleep?
Yes. They're, like, normal things. Like, it'll be, like, a normal conversation. Like, hey, hand me that. And I'll be like, hand you what? And then I'll wake him up from me talking. And he's like, what'd you wake me up? What'd you wake me up? What are you talking about? And I'm just like, I was responding to you talking. Shut the hell up.
Wow.
They're just like...
I might mumble, I think. Jeff says I mumble in my sleep, but I don't think you can make it out. It's just like...
No, his was like normal conversation, like a normal thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Sleepwalking. I've seen people sleepwalking. That is creepy.
Brandon said his brother did it. Yeah. Very creepy.
That's so weird that your mind can make you do that.
Yeah, and that you're, like, I don't know, that you're even able to do it. Like, I'd be cool with sleepwalking if I would sleep work out.
What?
I said I'd be cool with sleepwalking if I slept, if I slept work out.
Me too.
If I, like, got on the treadmill and burned some calories, I'd be like, all right,
wake
cool.
up, your muscles would be sore, and you're like, what in the heck did I do last night?
I'd be okay with it. That's
you go
cool.
look at your treadmill, it's got 15 miles on there, and you're like, damn.
I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay.
You come to bed laying in a pool of sweat.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Got anything else to say, Tinsley? You've been pretty loud this entire episode. Are you quiet now? Nothing to say?
She just wanted to be a part of it with us.
All right, but that is it for this episode. Thank you guys so, so much for listening. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.